Today's program was brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
I'm Erica Wides, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Short and hot with Chef Family.
Short and hot with Chef Family.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. On today's show, we are going to talk through two pieces of breaking food news, and after the break, we are going to have on my good friend, Casey Barber, who's going to talk about her new book, Pierogi Love, and we are going to have a taste test. I don't know if I can make it that far. The smell of butter has filled the studio, and I'm so excited. Joining me in the studio is Anne Hogan, my producer. Hi, Anne.
Hello. How's it going?
I want to jump right in on this breaking news out of Denmark. I'm so excited. Jack, do you have a little... Here we go. We're setting the stage. Oh, that's much more grim
breaking
than I thought it was going
to
be.
That's the breaking news sound.
Oh, that's the breaking news sound. Sorry.
I love it. Everyone is dying. The world is turning gray. No,
what happened
Man,
there?
That's like ominous.
So I've been listening to a lot of Ratatouille, and what I thought we were going to hear was the theme song, because this news has to do with the French paradox, which is how is it that French people can eat... Beautiful. So the French paradox is how is it that French people drink as much wine as they want throughout the day, eat cheese, eat rich stews, and they are thin and they live forever.
Right.
So there's another piece of the puzzle has fallen into place, which is research out of Denmark. Aarhus University has linked cheese consumption, not other dairy, just cheese, to lower levels of cholesterol and a lower risk of heart attack.
Hallelujah.
Led by a woman, a doctor named, I think it's a woman, Hannah, H-A-N-N-E, I would say that's a woman, right?
Bet that.
Hannah Bertram, researchers compared the diet of 15 healthy men whose diets contained either cheese or milk, and then others who ate a control diet with butter but no other dairy products. Okay, so we have two groups.
Okay.
People eating cheese, people not eating cheese. They found that those who consumed the cheese on a regular basis had higher levels of a compound called butyrate. B-U-T-Y-R-A-T-E, food scientists, Chef Emily Chef Emily at sharpandhot.com. Please, you can send me phonetic spellings of these things. Butyrate, a compound produced by your gut bacteria when you eat cheese.
Huh.
Higher levels of this chemical were linked to a reduction in cholesterol. It is a straight line between more butyrate created by eating more cheese equals lower cholesterol. Therefore, all of the things that go along with high cholesterol go down as well. Writing in the report, Mrs. Bertram said, the study suggests that the cheese could be an important piece of the French paradox puzzle. Take that, Dr. Lynn.
There you go.
Listeners will recall, I was diagnosed with high blood pressure, and I stand by my high blood pressure, blood cholesterol and food cholesterol are not related, now backed up by science.
There you go. Science, cold hard facts. But I don't think that they mean like Velveeta or
no,
crap.
And
I think they mean real,
like fromage. The cheese that the French would be eating,
right.
Which is would not be the American cheese slices that I hold so dear, which we will get to after the break. No, I think they mean real cheese that fall into the seven cheese categories that are the way cheese was that our great-grandparents and the French great-grandparents were eating. Not wrapped in plastic and all that sort
of
stuff.
Got it. All right. I'm in.
So I got my own research to start. In other news, there was a piece of New York City Department of Health information that passed through the business section of the New York Times. And as food people, we heard about it. And there's been a little bit of a controversy because starting in August, the health department is going to require fish be frozen before it's served raw. And we have on the line with us Phil Gilmore, who is the owner of Momo Sushi Shack, who is an expert in serving raw fish. Hello, Phil.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm actually in a rental car. I almost was going to do this interview in a bathroom. I'm at this barbecue called Prime Smokehouse, Rocky Mount, North Carolina, and driving down to Miami. Did a pop up for Momo down in Miami, so we just had to drive. But I was at a barbecue restaurant, couldn't hear it. So.
All right. We have the line's a little crackly, so I'm going to get the question out, and then we can see. We'll see if we can hear you. But what I got from that is that you are on a road trip to Miami, and you have pulled over at a barbecue place, and you almost were in the bathroom, but instead are in the rental car, which I appreciate.
Exactly.
Although we would have taken it from the bathroom too, you know. And if you hadn't told us, it would be like Julia Child's kitchen. No one would have known. So this new stipulation is that fish will be required to be frozen for an amount of time based on how cold restaurants can get it, from 15 hours to 1 week, depending on the temperature used. Tell me what your thoughts are on this, Phil.
Well, you know, I've spoken about this. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead. We're good.
Okay. Basically, I don't think it's going to affect much as far as sushi goes because, you know, a large majority of sushi fish is previously frozen anyways. You know, what it's about is how it's handled as soon as it's caught. If you freeze a fish and you freeze it very slowly, it affects the texture of the fish. But if you have a super freeze it right away, it doesn't really affect the quality of fish. So I'm not worried about it. You know, you're ever wondering, like, when you go to the supermarket and you tune in at, you know, $5 a pound, as soon as it's $20 a pound, is how it's frozen. So if it's frozen properly, it doesn't affect the quality.
And my understanding is that the meaning of the word sushi grade, when you see sushi grade tuna or sushi grade salmon, are meaningless, like when you see something labeled in the supermarket as all natural. There's no law that requires, you know, that there's some standards of what makes something sushi grade, but my understanding is that it actually refers to fish that has been frozen to a particular temperature to destroy any potential pathogens.
Well, you know, definitely with the salmon, it has to do with the pathogens, and then with the tuna specifically, it's not like they don't go 15 miles off of the coast to catch one tuna and come back. They go out like, you know, 2 weeks or a month or something, and so they freeze them on the boat. You know, so all salmon frozen in.
And the other thing that I thought was interesting is that shellfish is exempt. And if you've ever worked in a restaurant, when you take in a shipment or a delivery of oysters or clams, it comes with a tag that the restaurant has to save for 3 months, so that if someone should get sick, you have the tag so that you can go back to the body of water and test it to see if there was some sort of contamination. And shellfish is where most people, if they get a foodborne pathogen from seafood, it's coming from shellfish, and they're exempt anyway. It's unheard of that people get sick from eating fish, not as opposed to shellfish, finfish.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and also too, you know, with shellfish specifically, it's up to the individual person, because, you know, sometimes you might actually open up a bad oyster or clam and you can smell it or, you know, taste it or see it. And then also too, people might keep it for 1 day extra. So a lot of times it's not even the body of water. I think it's the irresponsibility of the actual purveyors that are serving that. You know, serve the self in the beginning anyway, you know?
Right. And if I remember correctly, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, but my understanding was that the first iteration of this new law, what really caused the stir was that restaurants were going to be required to invest in super deep freezers. And it seems like that provision has been taken out of the law, which has led the New York Restaurant Association to even they are on board, like, okay, yeah, this is a good thing.
I actually do not know the answer to that question.
I'm almost certain that that's the case. I will cross-check that. And the other question I have is, do you have any insight into how this is going to be enforced or monitored? And second question to that is, does it just generate a willingness to be deceitful?
No to the second part. But okay, the first part is, I think that you know, there's going to have to be labeling and you know, temperature readings, and I think that, you know, people probably won't take it seriously in the beginning, but then they'll get, you know, fines, and then they'll have to start doing it anyways.
I feel you like know, this... Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, a lot of people, you know, this is not a popular sentiment amongst restaurant owners, but, you know, a lot of these laws, I don't really hate the health department, because a lot of these laws are in place for a reason, and there's 30,000 restaurants in New York City. And, you know, it sucks when I have to pay a health department fine. It sucks that they, you know, they kind of lean on you. But also, man, I don't want some idiot fucking not knowing what they're doing and get people sick either.
Exactly.
You know, I think some of these laws, it sounds like it's, you know, bad, but it's kind of, for the most part, it's good, man. You know, like, they, you know, restaurants should be checked.
I completely agree.
Check on them. If you don't check on them, people will get sick, and people can get away with anything they want. So I think, it sucks for the good guys, but it's, you know, you have to keep the bad guys in check too, you know?
I completely agree with you. And, you know, when you're talking about something as sensitive or, you know, shelf unstable as seafood, like, you want somebody making sure that stuff is being served to you as fresh as possible, even if that means it's been frozen. Like, I don't see where the controversy came from, and so I'm glad to hear that you and I are on the same page.
You know, it's a little known fact, but Jack Insley actually gets sick when he doesn't eat my seafood.
That's a true story.
Yeah, he actually gets really, really sick when he doesn't eat a Momo Sushi Shack. So I think that's kind of a fun thing.
Luckily, Momo Sushi Shack is right around the corner from Heritage Radio Network.
Yeah, and then we're gonna be doing a pop up in the Mondrian Hotel in South Beach starting this weekend. So if anybody's down in Miami, come say hi this weekend to us.
Amazing, Phil! Thank you so much for taking time out of your road trip. Have a great trip and have a great pop up. That sounds so fun.
All right, thank you so much. Nice to see you guys, or talk to you guys. nice to see you in my mind's eye.
See you on the radio.
All right. Take it easy.
Bye.
Okay, so we're on the same page. Phil and I are on the same page.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, I want to hate on the, you know, it's like hating on the cops. Like, if you get a speeding ticket, it's because you were speeding. You know, like, do I speed? Sure. But if I get busted, I'm not going to hate the cop because I was speeding. You know, like, I want everybody to be safe and everybody to play by the rules. I will give one health inspection story that would be the flip side, just in case anyone's screaming at their radio about how onerous and horrible the health department can be. Mm-hmm. In my very first position on the line at the Green Table right out of culinary school, everyone had gone home. It was the eve of Thanksgiving. It was 10 p.m. Oh. I was literally turning the lights off. We were making kimchi at room temperature, right, percolating away, doing its fermenting thing. And in the back door walks a health inspector. I was completely alone. So I text the chef, who is like, don't say anything. And then he comes sprinting back. She was there to make sure we were in compliance with the trans fat laws, and we got written up for every wheel of imported cheese that was in the walk-in because it didn't have a trans fat free sticker on it. And Mary Cleaver had to, like, go through the process of fighting that, being like,
oh wow,
by definition a wheel of Parmesan is trans fat free. And it was this exercise in futility that,
right,
they're not a glowing example of making the world entirely a better place. But when it comes to keeping people safe, how can you oppose that?
Right. But then when it, like, gets set up with those, like, arbitrary, like, rules for rules' sake that don't make any sense, it's so hard to, like, keep a level head about that.
Right. That's where we come in. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will be joined by my friend Casey Barber, an author of Pierogi Love, her new book. And we are going to eat samples on the air.
I was in
You're listening to Odetta Hartman on the break. We'll be right back.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, joining you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We are joined in the studio by our favorite kind of guest, the one that brings samples, my friend Casey Barber. Hi, Casey.
Hi.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot.
Thank you. I'm happy to be in studio with
you. Last time you were here, you were talking about classic snacks made from scratch, but you were on the phone.
Yes, I didn't bring you any snacks, and I'm so sorry.
You are here to atone for your sins.
And
we have come very far. And how? So tell us, first of all, tell me about pierogies, why pierogies, and I apologize for misspelling pierogi. I think I've spelled it every way possible since I was writing all of our stuff.
Well, technically, you sort of can spell it every way possible. I was just busting chops, as I do, because even the Polish spelling, pierogi, or the Polish word, is one word for the dumpling, whereas a vareniki is Ukrainian, or pelmeni, or pierogi, or...
I've heard pierogi.
Pierogi, yeah. Although technically those may be the baked kind of like the puffy, bready ones. There's kalduny. They're in Romania. They're in Russia. They are in Croatia. They are some variation of this dumpling is all over Eastern Europe, and it goes by like many names. It's like the Ben Linus with all the passports.
So those of you who still remember, my God, lost. Deep cut. I love it. Yes. Yes.
So if someone listening has never heard of a pierogi, what are we talking about in the most general sense?
It is a dumpling in the absolute most general sense. If you're thinking of some sort of filling with dough wrapped around it, this is just another word for how the Eastern Europeans do dumplings, because they can be filled with meat, potatoes, cheese of sweet or savory varieties, fruit. And I've just sort of expanded upon that topic in weird and hopefully wonderful ways in the book.
So Anne and I, last week on the show, we were talking about how pierogies play a part in our like childhood sensory memories.
Right.
Like one of my earliest memories of going to my maternal grandmother's house where she would make pierogies, these huge batches, and then fry them in salt pork and then send us home with them. And I remember my father would just be like, can I have another one? Can I just, let me take one more bag for the road. And like that smell of like fried dough and salt pork is burned into my culinary sense memory.
Yes. Yeah. And especially because there's usually onions frying in
right,
butter
yep.
too,
mm-hmm.
and I mean the smell of an onion in butter is one of the greatest scents in the whole universe.
Absolutely.
And tell your story again.
Oh yeah, so my godmother is Polish, and so pierogies for me are Christmas. So her
yes.
and her daughter would make pierogies, and we're generally I'd say like mostly like an Irish and Italian, and there's a couple of Germans in there too, but. That Christmas we always had like Polish tradition, and we had like pierogies, we did like opłaki, like we did like the whole like everything, and it was just, oh man, pierogies are a special place in my heart, so thank you, Casey.
Well, so I am Italian German.
Okay.
So I grew up with lots of those food traditions, but I also grew up around Pittsburgh, where the pierogi is king, basically.
Yeah.
So you don't have to actually be Polish in Pittsburgh to appreciate that type of food culture, just as a lot of Polish people really appreciate a nice crock pot full of, like, sausage and peppers, and you would, as we did, throw the kielbasa in with the sauerkraut for the holidays, too. Like, that's my holiday smell, is kielbasa simmering in sauerkraut forever.
Wow.
So
nice.
It's really beautiful that you can grow up and experience all these things no matter what your family is cooking on Sundays. You're still going to the festivals and eating halushki and halupki and pierogi and all those great things. I have a deep abiding love for kielbasa, but I didn't bring any of that today, unfortunately.
But you made a special pierogi just for Sharp and Hot listeners. The recipe is up on sharpandhot.com. It is the Jersey breakfast pierogi, and I'm so excited. Tell us what's in it.
It is. It is. It has the non-cholesterol approved cheese in it, because being a good takeoff of the Taylor ham, as I call it, because I live in northern New Jersey, egg and cheese sandwich, you have to have American cheese on that thing. There is no way you're going to put on a really nice hunk of cheddar.
No. And Casey and I share a love of American cheese, an unapologetic love of American cheese.
So does my girlfriend. So does Amanda. She is like, I can't get her off this stuff. Yeah, it is American cheese all the way for her. Loves it.
So I had promised you the scrapple pierogi in our conversations prior to this, but then I heard that Anne was horrified, and I was like, you know what? Emily and I are both Jersey transplants. I'm from PA. She's from Long Island. We're both happily settled with our Jersey guys in New Jersey, and we both love a good breakfast sandwich with American cheese on it. Amazing. What could be more perfect to share today? So there's Taylor ham. There's egg. There's American cheese. You put it all inside a pierogi.
All right, I'm going in. Here we go. I'm going to get some sound here.
And that is, you're actually, you're that's the pea and mint one. That's
oh,
the
that's pea
one.
And mint. Okay, wait. I'm going to pass here, this to Anne. This is the vegetarian pea and mint. Anne would die before eating a piece of Taylor ham with American cheese on it, right?
But I do have to say that.
Whereas my cats were like, what are you making?
They're like, hey, what is that?
Oh, my.
That's so good. It was funny, though, you were talking about kielbasa before, and that's actually one of the things I kind of miss. Mm. That was like a big thing, mm-hmm. and we were, yeah.
Well, my sister and I were vegetarians for a really mm-hmm. long time growing up, and after college, well, my story of not becoming vegetarian is one for the books, too, but we were all at one of our local music fests in Johnstown, and my sister's like, I'm gonna go get some food, and she comes back with the most enormous kielbasa sausage sandwich in one of those little boats, and my dad's like, oh, when you fall off the wagon, you fall hard.
That is perfect.
You can't resist kielbasa.
We were at the Bohemian Beer Hall the other day in Astoria, and my friend came back to the table with kielbasa, and I was like, yeah, man, I miss that. No bites, but
and anytime you're ready to come back, we have a seat for you at the table.
There is.
Anytime.
I will bring the processed meat to the table anytime you're ready. American
cheese. So the first time, when we first moved to New Jersey, and I have to say, Mark is a New Yorker. His mom is Jersey, but if he listens to this and he hears that I did not correct you, I will never hear
Sorry,
of that. But we went to the bagel store, and I ordered a ham, egg, and cheese, expecting ham as I knew it from my, you know, other zip code upbringing, and I got Taylor ham, and my first experience, it was like the orange juice when you're expecting milk thing. Okay. I was like, what have they done to this ham? And then it took me, like, I had to talk to people about this experience, and they were like, no, dummy, it's a totally different thing.
Right, and if you were like down near Wildwood, you would have seen it as pork roll and it would not have been so confusing.
Right.
But the fact that
I didn't even look at the menu. I just said, can I have a ham, egg, and cheese, right, expecting boiled ham or Virginia ham, whatever, you know, something from the Boar's Head variety. Like, I'd never heard of Taylor ham in
what
my life.
What is Taylor ham? I don't know.
Well, it is a processed meat product that was created in the colonial era near Trenton by a man named John Taylor. And it is basically kind of a sausage bologna-like force meat that holds up well over time.
Okay.
It's freaking delicious.
And it's got a history.
So my refrigeration, Continental Armies all over the place in New Jersey. You gotta feed those guys.
Is it, like, comparable to, like, a Spam kind
of
thing? Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm not saying that to be derogatory at all.
Right. No, yeah, I mean, hey, go to Hawaii.
I enjoyed Spam. I'm equal opportunity.
So I didn't realize that it went all the way back to the colonial era. I figured it was, like, same time as the hot dog was, you know, it was.
It may have been the 1800s. Again, like, I wrote up the history of it, and now, of course, I've not brushed up on my Taylor ham history.
The link
recently
is on sharpenhot.com to your Taylor ham
history.
I love
history. That it has a history. I'm gonna read it after the episode for sure.
It is a New Jersey product through and through.
Which is why we never got it in New York.
Exactly.
So it's absolutely, it's delicious. It's filling, it's heartwarming, it's like buttery, and I mean, it's everything that you want. So.
And you can eat six of them at a pop, as I did while I was testing the recipe.
So when you were testing this book, did you get sick of...
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
so tell me about the process. I was privy to some of the recipe testing.
You were. I gave you a bale of hay and some buffalo chicken pierogies one day.
So I love my life. I have the best friends.
I was just the pierogi fairy for a long time last summer because, I wanted to make sure, once the dough was pretty much down pat, it was a question of how you're going to fill it 6 ways to Sunday. And so I would just be testing fillings half the time, but I also wanted to make sure that the portions were right so you could fill 2 dozen at a time for each dough recipe. So it was a little assembly line in my kitchen all the time. And I would just backpack all my extras because I couldn't bring myself to throw them away. And I would bring them to all my friends in the city and just do like pierogi drop-offs here and there. And
so awesome. Like, the day that I came to your house, I remember you opened the freezer and you were like, what flavor do you want? And you just had like just bags. I was like, I have no idea.
I still do. I'm like down to my last 100 or something at this point. But now I've refilled it with a few other ones. The pea and mint ones are not in the book either. They were a special pierogi recipe for those who pre-ordered.
They're delicious.
But I love them, and I feel like I'm going to have to share that somewhere else.
So
sometime.
Good.
Yeah, that's just really good.
That was my spring recipe.
Listeners couldn't see, but while you guys were talking, you saw I almost fell over myself trying to get another one. My hair got stuck in the microphone. I'm like, well, we're going to get another one. Well, they're
not responsible for pierogi injuries at all.
So we have the 2 savory, and you've also brought us a sweet one.
I did. I brought you guys some Nutella pierogies, which come with a cocoa dough, and if I had thought even more, I would have brought some, not homemade because I don't have any of this right now, but I would have brought some chocolate syrup, probably the Fox's You Bet that's in my fridge.
Oh, man, I love that stuff. Over it. Listeners well know my documented history of my son's nut allergies, and one of the things I'm saddest for him is that he will never know Nutella.
And that's, I brought the Nutella so you could have some nuts.
Thank you.
It's homemade Nutella inside, so you can have a little bit without the guilt. Because, as you know, my husband is also allergic to all tree nuts.
Oh, I did not know that.
So I can keep them in the house, and I can cook with them, but everything just needs, like the wheels of Parmesan cheese, everything just needs to be clearly labeled. Mm-hmm. Don't eat this, hazelnuts all over the place kind of thing.
Oh, my God.
I enjoy the homemade Nutella.
Oh, my God.
It just goes in its own jar in the fridge.
I feel wow. I could cry. I'm so thankful for you bringing these. Oh my God, I'm
chew break.
Oh, I know,
my God,
seriously.
So good.
It's a huge lifestyle change, and then when you get to dip your toe back in again, it's like it won't be forever.
I'm sorry. I guess if you fall off the wagon, you fall hard with Nutella.
How many is it appropriate to eat in a sitting?
I can usually do 6 in a sitting. I think Dan likes to do 8 as a full meal mm-hmm. in a sitting. Mm-hmm. If the pretzel pierogies are around, all bets are off.
Oh, my God.
Wait, what the hell is the pretzel pierogi?
It's the only... It is probably the most non-traditional pierogi in the book because this dough, it's such an easy dough. For people who are afraid of making their own dough, this is an awesome one to start with because there's no yeast. You're not, like, doing finicky rise times or anything. You are literally kneading it together and then cutting it out into rounds. But it doesn't bake well. It just gets really, really tough. Except for pretzels, you have to bake them because you have to dip them into the baking soda brown sugar solution to give it that pretty, pretty pretzel coating, and then you have to bake it. So it was a really tough recipe to nail, but they also taste amazing at room temperature, which I am personally not a fan of a cold pierogi except in clutch situations.
Right.
And I'm saying this as someone who will eat a cold leftover anything for breakfast at any time. But the pretzel pierogis are just like pop, pop, pop. And
was there an, like a moment in when you were in your kitchen where you were like, the skies parted and you're like, I know what to do?
Yes, it was one of those like eureka moments because I had tried them. They were the first recipe I started developing after I officially got the contract signed. I'd been developing some of the other ones just offhand while we were going through the negotiations process. And it was just failure off the bat. The cheese was oozing out. I wanted to do a beer cheese. Everything was too watery. There was, like, cheese oil all over my Silpat. I was like, oh, I will not let you get the best of me. So I tried and tried again, and a lot of those did get thrown away because they were just, like, little deflated beach balls of not cheese inside. And then finally, I got that exact right ratio, which is actually weirdly close to Cheez-It dough is what it ended up with.
Ah, call back to classic snacks came in handy.
My favorite classic snacks recipe too. And the pretzel pierogi came to be, and oh, it was good.
The book is called Pierogi Love. It is available now, right?
Yes.
On Amazon or wherever you buy your books. Casey Barber writes good food stories and is a contributor to The Kitchen.
The Kitchen.
And today.com. Thank you so much for making the trek out to Brooklyn and for bringing us snacks. I really appreciate
it. My pleasure.
The recipe for the Jersey breakfast pierogies is on sharpandhot.com, and it will be on heritageradionetwork.com on the Sharp and Hot show page. And before we go, Anne, I wanted to tell you that I got an email from a listener who goes by the name Matrix Orion.
Okay.
That was the return address.
Hello,
I thought maybe a business. Hello, Matrix. Regarding a story that I have up on Edible Long Island about charcoal grills versus gas grills. And I said, you know, like, it's that time of year. What do you prefer? And I say both. They're kind of two different things. It's like having a food processor or a blender. They are, mm-hmm. they do different things. The upshot is they both cook stuff. The gas grill is convenient and fast and easy to kind of click and it's on and then you click and turn it off. Charcoal, you have to let it cook, you know, let it get ready and it's messy and you have to deal with it and it's heavy. One of the things that I said at the end of the article was that when you're going to use charcoal, use real hardwood lump charcoal, not briquettes, because briquettes are only partially wood at all. It's a lot of wood pulp and wax and other things that are fine. They're not going to kill you, but hardwood lump charcoal gives you that like real wood smoky flavor that you're looking for.
Okay.
And Matrix emailed to say that I had left out a crucial detail.
Huh.
Just a hint, if you use actual lump cowboy charcoal in your grill, you will have almost no ashes to dispose of. This is just a tip from a Long Island guy who spent a lot of time in Texas.
All right.
And he's absolutely right. So thank you, Matrix, for writing in. My email address is chefemily@sharpandhot.com. If you want to get in touch on Twitter, I am @chefemilyp. And you can use the hashtag sharpandhot on Instagram. And I will send you a book from my collection. And now we have a copy of Pierogi Love on the stack that's going to go out to a listener. And let's see. We are thankful to Odetta Hartman for letting us use her music during the break. Our engineer, Jack Inslee. Our producer, Ann Hogan. Thank you for being wonderful. Our sponsor today was Bonnie Plants. Thank you to Nice Peter, Pete Shukoff for the theme song and Mike Marowit for the Sharp and Hot logo. And most importantly, thank you so much to all of the listeners who are out there making this show happen every day by virtue of the fact that you click and listen. If you are listening on iTunes, go ahead and leave us a review.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we got a new one. I would love to see a fresh review up there and tell your friends, hey, there's this fun podcast about food and cooking. And let's see. Jack, engineer Jack, are we going to go out with a clip of another show today?
We are.
You want to set it up for us?
Should have it there. It's the. It's actually a clip of
it
Chef
is right there.
Justin Warner, who's from Do or Dine, which is in my home neighborhood of Bed-Stuy.
I just went to Do or Dine last night.
So good, right?
So fun.
Did you have the foie gras donut?
I did not have the foie gras
donut. Oh, right. You did not. Okay.
But it was
great. Well, this clip is actually about the law of peanut butter and jelly, as he calls it, which is his kind of explanation for why the foie gras donut works. It's a great clip. It's from All in the Industry by Shari Bayer. And that show is live every week. Wednesdays at 4 p.m. And let's just cut to the clip, yeah?
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Until next week, keep playing with fire and knives.
We determined that people want to know why and how of food. Not so much just instruction recipes. They want to get something and learn something.
On episode 61 of All in the Industry, Justin Warner joins host Shari Bayer to explain the secret principles behind his offbeat culinary creations.
And so they said, you know, foie gras donut, for example. I mean, why on earth did you make that? I said, well, I mean, it's a long story, but I knew it would go together. I mean, it's kind of like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And they're like, wait a minute. Peanut butter, you're telling me that a foie gras donut is a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? I said, yeah. I mean, so is pizza. They're like, what? Like, yeah, of course. Like, it's about fruit and fat and having some canvas to spread it on. I mean, the foie gras is fat. Peanut butter is fat. Cheese is fat. Tomatoes of fruit, jellies of fruit, PB&J, you know, foie gras donut, it's all there, pizza. So I determined that the law of peanut butter and jelly is something that is true and something that exists and it is real. And if you have fruit, fat, canvas, you'll be fine. Yeah, so like another law is the coffee, cream, and sugar law, which is kind of the idea if you have something bitter, add something creamy, add something sweet. Or you could just say fatty and sweet. So, I mean, if you think about coffee, or raw chocolate. You know, cacao is bitter as all get out. It's one of the bitterest things that there is. But the second you add sugar and milk to it, it becomes milk chocolate. So that's kind of, you know, just a simple example. But, you know, if you look at, like, bitter greens, most of the time people add some sort of oily, fatty component and something that's subtly sweet to it. I mean, that's what makes great greens.
To hear more from Justin Warner and special guest photographer Daniel Krieger, check out episode 61 of All in the Industry with Sherry Bayer. For more great shows on the hospitality industry, you can listen to all the episodes of All in the Industry available on heritageradionetwork.org. This piece was brought to you by Fairway Market. Like no other market, fairwaymarket.com.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.